The Children and Families Seniors Subcommittee will come to order. Please take your seats, turn and silence your electronic devices. Cheryl, please call the roll and announce the quorum. Members, please turn your mics on so when you answer the roll call, you'll be heard.
Chair Altman.
Here.
Representatives Bartleman.
Here.
Guerrero.
Here.
Brannon.
Here.
Costello.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Fisher.
Here.
Hay.
Here.
Gillibrew.
Here.
Foster.
Here.
Roach.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Roth.
Here.
Saroy.
Here.
Trabulsi.
Here.
Valdez.
Present.
Williams.
Here.
Woodson.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. First is House Bill 837, Rep. Byrd.
All right. Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee, for your consideration this afternoon. I have House Bill 837, Harm to Children. Florida law currently requires children to be buckled into a child safety seat or properly restrained while in a motor vehicle. Florida law also prohibits leaving a child unattended in a motor vehicle. To protect the child from any associated abuse or neglect, this bill would require that in cases where a physician substantiates that a violation of either of these aforementioned laws caused the death or injury of a child, a Department of Health child protection team will be called in to do a medical evaluation and determine whether there has been child neglect or abuse. The bill also requires all reports of child abuse or neglect made by an emergency room physician to be referred to a child protection team. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions, there is one amendment. Rep. Byrd, would you like to explain amendment barcode 892641?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment adds osteopathic physicians as defined in Chapter 459 to the bill. That is the amendment.
Okay, any questions of the sponsor? All right, seeing no questions, we do have one appearance card for the amendment for an individual waiving in support. And we have Stephen Nguyen with the Florida Osteopathic Medical Association. He's not here, but he waves in support. Okay. Do we have any debate on the bill? Oh, I'm sorry, do we have any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, so the amendment is approved. Okay, we now are in public testimony. I think we do have some cards here. Doug Bell, Florida chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Wave and support. Thank you. Okay, we got a few wave and supports here. We've got Stephen Nguyen again, Florida Osteopathic Medical Association, waves in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. And we have Stephen Nguyen again. That's from the amendment, I think. Okay, is there any other public testimony? I do not see any. Yeah, that concludes public testimony. Let's go to debate. Is there any debate on the bill? All right, Representative Byrd, seeing no debate, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chairman. And just briefly, I would say that sometimes when doctors in emergency rooms see evidence of abuse in this case and they investigate, it leads to evidence of other abuse. So sometimes when a parent is not properly restraining their child or using car seats, there is evidence of other abuse within the home. And so that's what we're trying to do, and I would just ask for your favorable support.
Okay, thank you so much, Cheryl. You're recognized to call the roll on House Bill 837. Announce the vote.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Guerrero?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Hay?
Yes.
Gillibrew?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Yes.
Saroy? Trabulsi? Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll show House Bill 837 reported favorably as amended. Thank you,
Thank
President
you, sir.
Byrd. Yeah, our next bill, House Bill 1447, Commission on Mental Health and Substance Abuse by Representative Hanchowski. Representative Hanchowski, you're now recognized. Explain 1447.
Thank you, Chair Altman, Vice Chair Roth, Ranking Member Valdez, and the members of the committee for giving me the opportunity to present House Bill 1447. This bill is based on the third interim report of the 20th statewide grand jury. The grand jury was impaneled after the February 14, 2018 shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. The grand jury's report highlighted deficiencies in funding, leadership, and services related to mental health care throughout Florida, and called on the legislature to appoint a commission to specifically examine the provision of mental health services in the state of Florida. This bill creates that Commission on Mental Health and Substance Abuse, adjunct to the Department of Children and Families, requires the department to provide administrative staff support services to the commission. The purpose of the commission is to examine the current methods of providing mental health and substance abuse services in the state, to identify any barriers or deficiencies in the delivery of such services, and recommend changes to existing laws, rules, and policies necessary to implement the commission's recommendations. The bill provides purpose, membership, term limits, meetings, and duties of the commission, and requires the commission to submit a report of its findings and recommendations to the legislature and governor, and provides for future repeal unless saved by the legislature through reenactment. It also provides an effective date, and that is the bill.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the sponsor? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a time frame? In other words, does this commission every year report to the legislatures?
Through the chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative, for that question. I believe it's part of the amendment. It'll be a two-year period. They will after the first year, they will provide a report and then a final report in the second year.
You got that, Rep. Killebrew? Any other questions? Okay. Okay, we do have one amendment, and the amendment is amendment barcode 589293, and you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. The amendment revises the commission membership, expands the duties to consider additional topics, requires it to meet virtually, reduces the meeting frequency to quarterly, and requires it to complete its work sooner. That is the amendment, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions of the amendment? Yes, Representative Roth.
Yes, Representative, thank you for this fine bill. Obviously, this being the grand jury pushing this forward, obviously we know how important this is. Could you give us a little specificity on who is on the commission? I'm assuming that there's, you know, in order to make sure there's cooperation and sharing of information across many agencies, because you have so many different agencies dealing with healthcare, I mean, mental health care. Could you give us a little information on that, please?
Yes, through the chair.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Vice Chair, thank you very much for that question. We have currently a 19 members on the commission, and they range from everybody from a mental health court to managing entities, to people who are partaking in mental health services throughout the state. We also have somebody from the legislature, and it's really, the idea was to incorporate as many people as possible who are handling either the delivery of services, accessing services themselves, helping others to access services, and the point being, this can't be something that is just theoretical. This has to make a concrete, real-life difference in making sure that the people who need the services are getting them in the most efficient and effective way.
Okay, any other questions? Seeing none. We have no public testimony on the amendment. Is there any debate on the amendment? Nope, no debate. Okay. Okay. You may close in your amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Before I close, I would just like to thank your staff. Hillary has been incredibly amazing to work with. Her expertise in this area and her guidance in crafting language that more perfectly encompasses what the grand jury was asking for was wonderful. And I just want to say thank you very much. And I encourage everybody to support this bill. It's a good opportunity to take a look at how mental health and substance abuse services are being provided in the state and make sure they're done in the most efficient and effective way. And with that, I close. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there any objection to the amendment? Without objection, so the amendment is adopted. Okay. We are now on public testimony on the bill as amended. We have Natalie Kelly. Natalie Kelly waves in support. Okay. I think we got a lot of cards here. We've got Barney Bishop waving in support, representing Florida Smart Justice Alliance. We've got Shane Messer, Florida Council for Behavioral Health Care, waving in support. Megan Turetsky with the Children's Services Council of Broward County, waving in support. Alejandro Gonzalez with United Way of Broward County, waving in support. Okay. Okay, I think that concludes any public testimony. Representative Hunchowski, you are recognized. Well, first, is there any debate on this bill? Yes, Representative Barlow.
I just want to, as someone who is a Broward County resident and was on the school board, I want to thank Representative Hunchowski for her great leadership during that time, which was just painstaking for each and every one of us and the families, and the leadership you provided as mayor of Parkland, and how grateful I am that you're now bringing forward this bill to resolve the issues that the grand jury identified that helped led to this situation, including the silos, communication barriers. So I think this is going to be a great committee to get everyone in the room and figure out how to fix the system. Our chair has done a wonderful job with presentations, making sure we all have an understanding of what's going on. And we recently had a panel who, you know, identified as some of them as being interviewed by the grand jury, and they felt there was definitely a need for this. So thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I appreciate your leadership on all levels. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Roth?
Yes, I too would like to speak in support of this good legislation. We learned with Marjorie Stoneman Douglas that the communication was a big part of it. We did a lot of really neat things, and Marjorie Stoneman even had an app that allowed the students to anonymously report problems. It was a situation where you had people that knew there were problems, but it was always somebody else's job to report. In this case, we're talking about mental health moving forward in the forward in the state of Florida. And to have this commission and having so many people from the agencies that are providing mental health in so many ways, my hope is that we don't try to reinvent the wheel and try to create a whole new mental health hierarchy in the public school system, but we use managing entities and other cross areas to do this. And I think having this commission will allow the more free flow of information. So, because it's a big burden on the school system to implement this, and we need to do it the right way. And I think this commission is a great first step. So thank you for this great bill.
Representative Woodson.
Thank you, Chair Altman. Thank you as well, Rep. Hunchowski. I really appreciate your leadership on this bill, and I echo the sentiment of my colleagues. I have to say this bill came at the right time. in light of COVID, and we don't know what the aftermath going to look like. We've seen how mental health is really taking a toll on our community, and we expect it. We can foresee that it's going to be a lot of issues looking at the kids who were isolated during the pandemic, who couldn't relate, you know, couldn't be in school to be with their friend. There's a question of isolation, and as well as our entire community. We all have been faced with some issues during our life with family members or friend who has been impacted by mental health. And when it comes to our children, we know we need to do better in that area. So thank you so much for this bill. I look forward to support you on it, and I appreciate all the hard work that you have put forward in order to bring this bill forward. Thank you so much.
Okay, I think that completes the debate. President Honchowski, thank you for this bill. You're recognized close.
Thank you very much, Chair Altman. And I want to personally thank you for allowing this bill to be heard today. This is something that is very important in our state and in this day and age, making sure that we are addressing mental health and providing services in the most efficient and effective way. And with that, I ask for your support, and I close. Thank you.
Cheryl, please call the roll on House Bill 1447 and announce a vote.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Pacello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher? Haig?
Yes.
Hillebrew?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Cerulli? Trabulsi? Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Altman?
Yes. Members, by your vote, we will show House Bill 1447 reported favorably as amended. Thank you so much.
Thank you very
Representative
much.
Representative Honchowski. Okay, we will move to House Bill 1349 by Representative Lupus, Assistant Programs. Rep Lupus, you are recognized to explain House Bill 1349.
Thank you, Chair. Great to see all the members. As I was just sitting here thinking, I heard a couple of members today say that they were bringing bills back that they'd brought over previous terms. This is actually the only bill that I've ever brought back for a second year, and it's because it's so important to me. And I'm going to sort of paint the picture of why I think this bill is important, and then I'll get into the substance of it. As many of you know, for the last 10 years, I've worked in the early childhood arena, trying to find ways to give every child in our state the foundation that they need to be successful in school and in life. And I have a very good friend who works in this space with me, and she got a call one day from a mother who had a young child who was in our school readiness program, which is, for those of you who don't know, that's our subsidized child care program. And she called my friend and she said, I have an issue. My boss has offered me a $1 an hour raise, and I really, really want to take it. You know, this is an opportunity for me to grow in my career. It's an opportunity for me to put more money in our bank account. But if I take that $1 an hour raise, which extrapolated out over the course of the year would be $2,000, she would no longer be eligible for the subsidy for her child's childcare, a subsidy she knew was critical to her child's long-term development. So we put this mother in a predicament where we're asking her to decide between her own personal professional growth or what's in the best interest of her child. And my friend, who was trying to guide the mother in that situation, finds herself in the dilemma of saying, the best thing you can probably do right now is to invest in your child. The benefit of a childcare subsidy will be somewhere between $5,000 and $7,000, and you know the net benefit the benefit you'd receive from your pay increase would be $2,000. But still, I hope it should concern all of us that we are putting parents, hardworking parents, in these predicaments where they're being forced to decide whether or not they move forward in their career, or they can support what they know their children need. So there's a term for this. What this mother faced was called the fiscal cliff, where as she grew in her career, the benefits that she was receiving to support her in her growth, she fell off. And what this bill seeks to do, and it was a bill that we passed through all three committees last year and voted off the floor unanimously, is to look at the state's social support systems and begin to identify through data where these fiscal cliffs exist, and hopefully that data will help guide us as we move forward to ensure that we're not putting parents in a position where they're having to make decisions about their own professional growth and the fundamental necessities of their children. So, Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the sponsor? Rep. Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. According to the story you just stated, young mother working 40 hours a week. My supervisor feels that I'm doing a good enough job to increase my salary by $1 per hour. If I accept that dollar per hour, I would lose my child care assistant, which will be approximately, if it's a young child, $500, $600 a week. And I won't be able to afford that if I accept that dollar. With this bill, you're stating that it will fix that problem. So, as a young mother, I would be able to accept that dollar and continue to be on the subsidy that assists me with taking care of my child, child care services. Is that what this bill is all about?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Williams, I know you care about this issue as much as I do. I wish that this bill fixed that problem. What this bill does is it allows us to collect the data to understand where these fiscal cliffs are manifesting, not only related to childcare, but related to housing, healthcare access. All of the fiscal cliffs that parents may be facing, it allows us to look at the system as it currently exists, understand where those cliffs are, and then give us really a blueprint, a guide path moving forward in terms of how do we actually avoid a situation where we're putting that mother in a predicament where she's having to decide between her own professional growth and the best interest of her child.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And I'm glad you brought this bill up because this happens all the time. And when you have young mothers that's trying, struggling, doing all they can to make sure they are providing for their family, when we are putting them in a situation, I see that you're stating that the audit general will conduct the audit every 3 years. Is that every 3 years on the programs that they're under or every 3 years for the money or the funding that this program will receive?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Williams, there is an amendment to the bill where the Auditor General is no longer doing the study. It's actually being moved over to the Anita Zucker Center at the University of Florida because they're able to do it at no cost to the state in conjunction with the Office of Early Learning. The three-year window is to really look at, sort of in this moment in time, pre-pandemic, pandemic, post-pandemic.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up, go ahead.
Thank you. So once the audit is done, the 2.5 years in between, what happens at that time? We don't have any data that we're going to actually try to pick up on, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, once we have we've already had the pre-pandemic. We've just gone through the year of the pandemic. We'll have the post-pandemic year. All of that data will be collected, provided to the legislature, and hopefully, again, that data will allow us to develop policies that will address the issue.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that will be for the programs we're talking about. Will this also give us an audit on the money that these programs will actually be accepting from the different pots of money that they receive to help struggling parents?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you repeat the question one more time, Rep. Williams? I'm not quite following.
Each program received X amount of dollars per year, per 2 years, to assist struggling families. Because I served on the audit committee last session and we had a major problem of money being missing, will this three-year audit that we're talking about from the audit general be included in this, or this is something altogether different?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Rep. Williams, I know you sat on the committee that addressed the Tiffany Carr issue. This is really looking at the income eligibility piece, right? So to understand, and school readiness is something you and I both know, understanding, does it make sense for school readiness to have sort of a sliding scale, right? So rather than reaching a certain point and having your child lose that entire subsidy, does it make sense to have a situation where a parent has a copay, right? Rather than putting that mother in a situation where she truly has to decide whether or not she takes that promotion, rather saying you take that promotion and with that increased income, you know, you continue to have your subsidy, but there's perhaps a percentage that you paid. I mean, again, a lot of this data is just to help guide those policy decisions.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This is just collected information on the data and information to assist the parent. This is not auditing that company, organization, groups that will actually be receiving money.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representatives, the data that we're collecting is to understand how the programs are sort of, overlaying with one another, how it's impacting families, and if there are policy decisions that we can make as a legislature to help families, address these situations.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Woodson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. Alupis, for bringing this bill to our attention. I believe in accountability, and we need good data in order to make sure that people are accountable for whatever money is being given. There are several pools in the school readiness program as well as in the VPK program, as you know. Would that apply to every single one of them, including the CCPP, which is the child care partnership pool where the money comes from different partners, not really from the state? Would that cover everything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great question, Representative Woodson. So really, this bill is really focused on the eligibility component. So whether you're talking about CCDBG, you're talking about school readiness funding, whether you're talking about Title I dollars, it's really not looking at the braiding of funding that we're using right now for the provision of childcare. It's trying to understand, how does the income eligibility for every individual program overlap with one another? And is there a way in which we can ensure that parents aren't being put in this situation where, again, they're having to make decisions based upon a subsidy they may get, whether it be for housing or for food or for childcare.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that response. Recently, we voted on a bill where the early learning going to be under the Department of Education. Did you factor that in, or is that something that you need to look at since they will be reporting to DOE as opposed to the previous structure that they had?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're talking about Representative Grawl's bill that moves mm-hmm. the governance structure. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what happens with the governance structure in that bill, at this point, my understanding, and I'll get clarity for you, I don't believe that it's going to change the eligibility requirements that parents are currently facing, regardless of what the governance structure is over the Office of Early Learning.
Okay. One more question, Mr. Chair. Would that data, can I go? Okay. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the data be available as well to the general public, the data that you will be collecting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll get clarification for you on that issue. Right now, it's just provided to the House and the Senate and the governor's office, but I'll get clarification for you on that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Vice Chair Roth.
Chair, I think I'm going to wait until debate.
Okay.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Ranking Member Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Alupis, I'm so happy that you brought this bill back up because I remember voting on it last session, and it's phenomenal. My question for you is, are they using federal guideline poverty guidelines right now? I'm not sure which guideline. Is that the guidelines that they're using now for eligibility purposes?
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I have one question. This is a phenomenal bill. Why didn't it pass last year? As we advocate, and this moves through the process, any help we can give you? I just can't believe this didn't pass.
Thank you, Mr. Can I just blame the Senate? No. I think the main issue. Don't tell them I said that. But, okay. This isn't on the Florida Channel, is it? I think last year there was a philosophical difference in who was responsible for handling the data collection, right? So, at one point it was the Auditor General, then it was a third party. Obviously, the conversation about cost to bring in a third party was discussed. And I can speak, the amendment really addresses who's responsible for the collection of data, but If you'd like, I can talk about it now.
Perfect segue to the amendment, it sounds like, right?
Perfect segue.
Okay, there's one amendment by Rep. Lupus. You're recognized to present amendment barcode 964699.
So members, this amendment aims to collect data from multiple public benefit programs to determine how families are accessing public benefits and which combinations of benefits are being utilized, sort of what I just explained. This now puts the collection of data in the hands of the Anita Zucker Center at the University of Florida, as well as the Office of Early Learning. The reason why this is so important is that the Anita Zucker Center at the University of Florida has actually already begun collecting a lot of this data in doing heat mapping for childcare over the summer, something that I had the privilege of being a part of. So a lot of the data is already being collected by them, and because they're already doing it, there's not going to be an appropriation necessary for the data collection to be done. That is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the sponsor on the amendment? Okay. We do have one card from Michelle Watson, Florida Children's Services Council, Inc. Wave in support. Great. Okay. Okay, is there any debate on the amendment? Yes. Oh, okay. I don't think, do we have any debate on the amendment? On the amendment. Okay. All right, seeing no debate on the amendment, recognize closing your amendment.
Wave.
All right, any opposition to the amendment? And without objection, show the amendment is adopted. Now we're on public testimony on the bill as amended. We got some cards here. Okay. Michelle Watson, Florida Children's Services Council, Inc. Waves in support. Okay. Karen Woodall, Florida Center for Fiscal and Economic Policy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take this opportunity, one, to thank you, Representative Lupus, for this bill. It's very important, and I want to also take this opportunity to request or suggest maybe a little addition to the research, because with the fiscal cliff and all of these programs that are so critical to our families, there's income eligibility. And much of that's guided by the federal government, and some of it is a floor from the feds, and then the state has a responsibility, and I trust that will be identified in here. But along with the income eligibility, if you could look at the requirements of the program, because a lot of times there's a disconnect between requirements and reality, and I mean by that, we've seen before bills that want to increase sanctions for people who don't participate properly in the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, for example, with little examination of why they didn't participate. What were the reasons the sanctions were given? And oftentimes, when there was some research done into that, it happens because somebody didn't respond to a piece of mail, or somebody couldn't get childcare in order to participate in the work requirements, or couldn't get transportation, or was not proficient in English, or was a returning citizen and couldn't get a job. So they get sanctioned and kicked out of a program. So I would just suggest that be a part of this evaluation, since you're taking a deep dive into these programs. It'd be really good to connect those dots so we can really move forward, which I know is your goal, on helping families move out of poverty in a way that works for them and is good for their families and the state. So thank you.
Thank you. Michael Johnson, is he here? I didn't see him. He is a proponent of the bill. Matthew Choi is from the Florida Chamber, waves in support. Megan Turetsky, Florida Services Council of Broward County, is also in support of the bill. I think that includes our cards and includes our public testimony, so we'll now move into debate. Any debate? Yes, President Parliament.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just want to say to Rep. Lupus that this is an amazing bill and the funding cliff is a real thing. and that as we, as the minimum wage increases steadily over the next 5 years, many families are going to be faced with these important decisions. And so I appreciate this effort, and I hope to expand it to kid care next year. Just putting that out there for any help you can give, and I look forward to supporting this bill.
Vice Chair Roth.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, sir, I wanted to talk in favor of this bill. I think we all do know key elements of what makes our families prosper here in the state of Florida. I think we all realize that starting with a good education, that we have more economic opportunity, and the idea is to try to help people get out of poverty, you know, through education and obviously through public assistance, you know, bridge the gap. You know, these are sometimes considered to be temporary solutions, that we don't want them to be permanent solutions. We want to help them get out of that. So I wanted to just highlight why I think this is going in the right direction. Is actually Dr. Ben Carson, the previous secretary of HUD. He actually implemented a program where he said, okay, if someone, if a married member of my family moves back into my HUD housing, my income doubles. And under normal circumstances, that their rent would also double. But he implemented a delayed process so that you could have several years of having increased income because you had a family member move back into your house and double your income. I think that is probably going to be part of the solution, is that you don't automatically throw people out of public assistance as they move up the economic ladder, that you give them an opportunity to have both. And so I'm very high on this concept. I think we do have to look at, because it does concern me that we do seem to be having, you know, an increased number of people on these programs, you know, these school readiness programs and SNAP programs. It seems like we're having an increased number, and therefore we do have a problem. So thank you for this fine bill.
Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Lupus, I appreciate all the hard work that you have put forth to bring this bill forth. We have had several conversations. And those of you that are not familiar with the life of a struggling parent, people don't want to be on the system. They want help. And because you do a good job after you receive employment, you are kicked off the system. So let me walk you through that a little bit. Go to work every day, drop my child off to daycare center, do what I need to do to make sure I can feed my family. Once I receive that raise because my supervisor feels that I'm doing a good job, I am now faced with no child care services. If I can't drop my child off to the daycare center, that means I can't work. If I can't work, I can't eat. If I can't eat, I don't have a place to stay. So with us making these rules and regulations, we need to walk a mile in someone else's shoes before we start making all of these big decisions. People that are out working and doing what they're trying to do to make sure that their family are taken care of, and they reach a certain level in life where they are going to receive a raise, a 50-cent raise, 75% raise, a dollar raise, and then they go back from point F to point A again. When you're struggling parents and you are trying, you try to do all you can to make sure you're taking care of your family to the best of your ability. But because you put me in the situation to say that if I receive a dollar raise, guess what? I'm not going to do my best. I'm not going to go to work every day, and I'm not going to do what I need to do. Because if I get a dollar raise, which is going to give me an additional, what, $1,200 a year, you're going to kick me off a system where you're helping me pay the child care system for $500 a week. So $500 a week for 4 weeks, that's more than I can afford if you're giving me a dollar raise. So that means I'm going to either work half a part-time position or I'm not going to work at all. So which is best? Because if I do what I'm supposed to do and do what I can to take care of my family, you're going to not help me. People don't want to be on the welfare system. They want help. People don't want to have people pay for their child care, but they do. And those that do, they're struggling, and we need to do all we can to assist them. And if I'm not able to pay my mortgage, I'm not able to pay the rent, then I need housing assistance. If you give me housing assistance, then you don't want to give me daycare assistance. If you give me daycare assistance, you don't want to give me a SNAP. We can't have it all. We need to help when we can. And those that we can, we need to do. And if we can't, we need to try to find a way to do. And this is a great bill to assist those that's struggling. And I appreciate all the conversations you have had with me, and thank you very much for putting this forth.
Thank you. Representative Robinson?
I think everybody pretty much has said everything, but I just wanted to let you know that I do think this is a great bill. In my community, I serve locally, and there are many that will truly benefit from this. Rep. Roth, I agree what he said. I believe that this particular data research is going to help to actually strengthen our assistance programs and truly make them a true assistance program. Right now, what we have, it works, but it doesn't really work because it makes people have to make those very difficult choices to either continue with assistance or move forward. So I appreciate you bringing this bill, and I thank you very much. I will support it.
Thank you, Representative Woodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Lupis, for bringing this bill forward. Sometimes we make changes, but we don't really use the right tools in order to make those changes, or we don't get the right players involved in order to make the changes. I believe by using data, we can look at it in a comprehensive way and make the changes that we need to make. I agree with the lady who just came to present to give a testimony. We do have parents who lost the program as a result of lack of transportation, death in the family, or phone disconnected. Because after three unexcused absences, a kid can lose the program. And we have parents who really need the program in order to go and work. It could be a domestic violence case as well. So there are a lot of factors that might hinder someone from staying in the program. So I hope by analyzing the data, you take all these things into consideration. As well, when you look at VPK and school readiness, VPK, anyone can be eligible for VPK no matter what the income level is. So I hope that's taken also into consideration when the data is being collected, but when it's being analyzed as well. And I look forward to talking to you more about this. I've worked in Miami-Dade County. We had a large program of school readiness and VPK program, and I have overseen a lot of parts of the program, VPK and school readiness as well. So it's a great bill. I look forward to support it, but I would like to have more conversation on you, especially when the data have to be analyzed in order to make sure we cover all the bases. So thank you so much.
I thank you. Thank you. And I think that's all the debate we have. So Representative Lupis, you are recognized to close. Oh, I have one thing. I'd like to make a few comments. I hope within the next year or two, we'll see you back here presenting the findings and the resolutions to resolve all these problems. I really hope we do. All right, you're recognized. Close.
Thank you, Chairman. And I just want to, you wouldn't know this, but Ms. Karen Woodall and I go back a long time working on issues around early childhood. And you know, Rep. Robinson, Rep. Woodson, Rep. Williams, I couldn't have said it better than you. Let me just be very clear. This is about data. This is about having an informed position to move forward and make sure that these programs are interconnected in a way that actually works for families. And I'll close with this, and I think I didn't mention it in my remarks, but Representative Bartleman mentioned the minimum wage increase. We need this data as soon as possible because there is no question as the minimum wage increases, it is going to have an impact on individuals' eligibility for certain programs. And the last thing we want is, again, to put people in the position like that mother where they're having to make a decision about, and in that case, a decision that they don't have any control over because the wages are being increased constitutionally, where they could potentially be losing benefits that are so, so critical to the well-being of their children. So with that, I just ask for your support.
Thank you so much. Cheryl, you're recognized to call the roll on House Bill 1349 and announce the vote.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Pacello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Hay?
Yes.
Hilliber?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Cerulli? Trabulsi?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Ault?
Yes. Members, by your vote, we will show House Bill 1349 reported favorably as amended. Thank you, Representative Lucas.
Thank you, man. Have a great day.
Okay, we're going to slide back to the front of our agenda. Okay. Next is House Bill 1093, Abuse, Neglect, and Abandonment Education. Ranking Member Valdez, you're recognized to explain House Bill 1093.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and for listening and hearing this bill today. This bill, to give you a little history, before I get to the history, Chair Altman, may I proceed to the strike all amendment and discuss that as the bill?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you may.
Thank you very much. So the bill would be amendment number 107645. And this bill came out as a result of my partnership with the Ought to Be a Law program at Sumner High School in Hillsborough County. So I want to give a special shout out to Mr. Parada and a student of theirs that was one of our messengers last week, Cam Sargent, and the rest of the students who are back home watching this hearing today. They approached me with this bill after hearing too many stories about children in foster care facing abusive situations and simply not knowing what they should do or could do. This bill seeks to ensure that children who are placed into shelter or foster care are informed of their rights and options for instances of abuse, neglect, and abandonment. Too many children placed in foster care are unaware of what options and mechanisms they have to report instances of such behavior, and in many cases don't even know the types of actions that should be reported. This bill seeks to ensure that children know their options. This bill requires that caseworkers or other appropriate agency staff provide verbal and written instructions to a child entering shelter or foster care to educate the child on the process for identifying and reporting abuse, neglect, or abandonment, and review that information with the child every 6 months and upon every placement change. Each child must be given the opportunity to ask questions about his or her right to be free from abuse, neglect, or abandonment, and the process for identifying and reporting such. The bill states that instruction and materials should be age-appropriate and presented in a manner that can be understood by the child, using words and phrasings that the child can truly understand. Written materials must only be provided if the child is of sufficient age and understanding, for example. Case managers or other staff must document in court reports and case notes the date the child received the information. This also gives the opportunity for the caseworker to discuss some of the benefits right out of, you know, when they're aging out or being able to go into colleges and things of that nature, and talk about some of those benefits. So the bill also states that the school district boards are authorized and encouraged to establish educational programs for students ages 5 through 18 for identifying abuse, neglect, or abandonment and then their effects on the child. Mr. Chairman, this is the bill.
Thank you, and that is the strike all amendment.
Yes.
Barcode 107645. Are there any questions on the strike all? Okay, seeing none, is there any opposition to the strike call? Do we have any public testimony on the strike call, first of all? I don't think we do. Okay, any debate on strike call? Seeing none, Representative, you're recognized to close on strike call.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, again for hearing this bill, and just a message for our students back home. Your voices are being heard, and thank you very much for bringing this forward. And again, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank staff. Staff worked tremendously with me to be able to put this bill in the right posture so that we can align it to current law and federal law, so that then it's a seamless operation for the department. And for that, I thank you very much, and I close.
Thank you. Any objections to the strike call? Seeing none, without objection, so the strike call amendment adopted. Now we are in public testimony on the bill as amended, and we do have some appearance forms. We have Adeline Joseph Theopoli. Did I get that right? I was close. Thank you so much. Would you like to speak or wave in support? Florida PTA waves in support. Thank you very much. I think we have just forms here waving in support. Sarah Clements, waving support. And Barney Bishop from Florida Smart Justice Alliance waves in support. And I think those are all the appearance forms that we have. It should conclude the public testimony. Now, is there any debate on the bill as amended? I'm sorry? Did somebody say something? Got it. Ranking Member Valdez, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I waive close.
Waive the close. Cheryl, will you please call the roll on House Bill 1093 and announce the vote?
Representatives Bartleman? Barrera?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Gillibrand?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Cerulli?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Allman?
Yes. Yes, my members by your vote. I'll announce the vote. I'm sorry.
17-0.
Members by vote, we will show House Bill 1093 reported favorably as amended. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopping around a little bit. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much, Ranking Member. Okay, I think we have. Okay, next bills. Committee substitute for House Bill 689, Domestic Violence Centers. Representative Barrero, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. House Bill 689, Domestic Violence Centers, is about protecting the staff and the volunteers who work at domestic violence centers. You've heard me present a similar bill before this committee, which creates a public records exemption for the staff and the volunteers who serve there. This bill in particular, it makes it a misdemeanor on the first offense and a felony on the second and subsequent offense for someone to maliciously publish the information or the location information related to a domestic violence center. This is a problem because various domestic violence centers have reported how perpetrators have retaliated against their victims. They've gone back to the domestic violence centers and tried to publish the information, tried to intimidate the staff, threaten them. In one instance, one perpetrator who was gang-related came back to the domestic violence center, threatened to shoot the victim, and he had his gang members who were affiliated with him stand outside to try to intimidate the staff and the volunteers who worked there. In other instances, the centers have reported that drones had been hovering over the domestic violence centers and in some cases published that information online. We want to protect the location. Florida law shields the information about the location for a domestic violence center, but it doesn't make it a crime. So this adds criminal penalties for someone to retaliate, come back and maliciously publish that information. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Barrero. Are there any questions of the sponsor? There are no amendments. Let's go to public testimony. We have one form. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. Okay. Yeah, that concludes public testimony. Is there any debate on the bill? I don't see any debate. I do want to say one thing. I want to thank Representative Barrero for this bill. Having worked at a domestic violence shelter, there's a lot of stress there. You feel it. It's thick. Your anonymity and your ability to have your location protected is so incredibly important, and I want to personally thank you. It's going to make a real, real difference, and I hope it gets through the process here. On that note, you're recognized to close.
No, I'm honored to be able to present this. I think we need to make the utmost amount of protections that we can to protect the staff and the volunteers who tirelessly and very selflessly serve the victims of Domestic Violence Center. So with that, I ask for your favorable support, and I'll close.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll and announce the vote on House Bill Committee Substitute HB 689.
Sorry. Representative Bartleman?
Yes.
Ferreira?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Pacello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Cerulli?
Yes.
Tribolsi?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Altman?
Yes. Members, by vote, we will show House Bill Committee Substitute for HB 689 reported favorably. And I believe that is our agenda. And Representative Woodson moves that we rise.